And now, a man who campaigned against Barack Obama in all 57 states, Mark Gillar.
Good morning and welcome to the Tea Party Power Hour. A show where we still cling to our guns and religion. We have a very special show today. We're going to be talking with Jim Wise of the Surprise Tea Party from Arizona. But first up, Susan Daniels. You'll remember Susan is the person who discovered that Barack Obama was using a Social Security card number that was once used by someone else. She's here today to tell us about what happened whenever she went to court on the matter in the state of Ohio. Susan, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks, Mark. I'm happy to be with you.
I am thrilled to have you back on the show. Now, let's back up just a little bit before we dive into the courtroom stuff. Could you please give my audience a brief history of what it was that made you look into Barack Obama's Social Security number, and what exactly you found when you did that preliminary investigation?
Well, like everybody else in the country, I was very quickly concerned about Barack Obama shortly after he got into office. And it was the rush for TARP money, the rush for stimulus money, and something didn't sit right with me. One of my clients came to me and said, I'd like you to do a background on him. And I told him, I said, it's highly doubtful I'll find anything because he's the president. But I went to the databases that I can access and, came up with nothing for the first few. And then one that's kind of obscure, up pops this Connecticut-issued Social Security number with his name. And I was immediately concerned because I've been looking, at Social Security numbers for almost 20 years. And knowing that they were issued by where you lived at the time you applied for them. And when I saw Connecticut and I saw it was issued in 77, I knew there was a problem because I knew he was a teenager living in Hawaii at the time. Now, if it had come up a California number, I could have almost forgiven that. But when I saw Connecticut, I knew there was a big problem. So I
Why could you have forgiven a California number?
It, because they're so close to each other. You make allowances for error. But when something is as disparate as Connecticut and Hawaii, it's like, something is seriously wrong here. So what I did is I took that number and I ran it through a database I had called Social Security Number Verifier. And lo and behold, up pops Barack Hussein Obama with that Social Security number. And the years 1961, his date of birth, and 1890. And I got very alarmed at that.
Let me stop you right there. What we're saying is that when you looked in this database where the birth date was, we had his actual birth date of August 1961, but then in addition to that, you had the year 1890. So
Correct. You
said you had been doing this for almost 20 years at the time. Have you ever, in your career as a private investigator, looked at this Social Security Administration database and seen more than one birth date in the birthday box?
No, never. Out of thousands.
Out of thousands. Now, also, Susan, some people are saying, 1890, it didn't have a month and it didn't have a day. It just had the year. Would that have been completely unusual for somebody born in 1890?
I don't know about that. But when I started looking at his various addresses and addresses tied to a cell phone number, they came up intermittently with the year 1890 on them. So some would have his date of birth, and then intermittently with his name, the date of birth would be 1890.
Wow. That's interesting. Now, what a lot of people don't get is that 1890 would be the year that the person using the number was born. Because sometimes
right.
you hear people that aren't very bright saying, they didn't even have Social Security in 1890.
Oh, if you knew how many times I've heard that and I wanted to strangle people. No, of course not. They didn't. Social Security did not start issuing numbers till 1936. And it was voluntary at that point, unless you worked for a company that had 15 or more employees.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, that would have been the date of birth, not the date of assignment.
Right. So, basically, when this thing was assigned to Barack Obama, that person would have been 87. So, the theory is that that person passed away before they became 87, so that that number.
No, what I believe is that they were 87 and that they needed medical care and they could not get it.
Well, like no, Medicaid. 77 is when Obama got the number, correct?
Well, that's when the number
that's
was good. Issued. He never
okay.
started using it until the mid-80s.
Okay, but I'm just saying the person who got the number, the person who got the number, did they necessarily get it in 1977, or is that when Obama
yep.
got it?
No, that's when they got it. Obama
what,
never
yeah,
started
okay.
using it till the 80s.
Okay, thanks for clarifying that for me, because I understand that. So basically, somebody who was 87 wanted to apply for various types of government medical benefits, and in order to do that, they needed a Social Security number, so they went in and applied. So that's why the birth date is 1890, but the fact that we didn't have Social Security in 1890 doesn't really mean anything, because that's not when they applied.
No.
That's just when they were born. But I've, like you, I've heard that so many times, I'm sick of it. So I just wanted to get that out of the way. So,
well, the one other thing I'd like to add quickly is that people say, well, that's preposterous. But the woman that had her number was 12 numbers after his. His ends in 25, her ends in 37, and hers was issued the same day as him. She was born in 1896.
Yeah, so a lot of people born in that time period were picking up Social Security numbers.
Right, because it was women that had either gone off their husband's number or never had a number of their own and all of a sudden needed government help.
Gotcha. Well, that makes perfect sense, but again, as you well know from the types of criticisms that we receive from these OBOT clowns on the internet, they will say anything and everything to doubt, and most of the time they don't do very much investigating. Now, one of the other things that is a common criticism of what you've found is the idea that the Social Security Administration at one point came out and said, well, don't read too much into they put something up on their website. Don't read too much into, the number as far as which state it was issued, blah, 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 blah. When did they do that, and what are your
after
thoughts?
After I
that?
Came out with my information.
I kind of thought so, yeah. That's just like they found in Hawaii there were government jobs you could apply for that flimsy little short form that Obama came out with first wouldn't suffice if you wanted to apply. So, and people have screen captures of that Hawaiian government website saying you must bring your long form, not the short form. And so it's kind of funny when people pointed out that Hawaii issued these things and they were so not well thought of in Hawaii that for government jobs, or at least certain government jobs, you couldn't even bring the short form. Why should we accept that as proof of where the President of the United States was born? Then they went and scrubbed their website. You know, that's the government of Hawaii's response to things. Screw up rather than say, well, you know, actually, there are some jobs in Hawaii for which you can't bring the short form. Rather than just be truthful, they scrub their website. So anyway,
right.
that this thing of scrubbing websites and putting things up on websites and changing internal policy on how you handle things, I can another example of this type of nonsense is that in the state of Hawaii, based on their own internal rules, as far as releasing documents, once somebody has made their document public, they have forfeited their right to privacy. But apparently they've changed that rule. I think it's interesting that within only a few days of Sheriff Arpaio announcing his investigation, the Selective Service system came out with a new rule stating that they would only cooperate with federal investigations, not local investigations. So we've got a lot of people changing their policies as a result of,
they now randomly assign social security numbers. That happened a year and a half ago. That was way after I started my investigation. And this will sound very arrogant. I believe they changed the whole federal method of issuing Social Security numbers, trying to obscure what I had found.
I don't doubt that for a minute. I mean, we've seen Hawaii change laws because of the Obama birth certificate issue. We've seen the Selective Service system change policies as far as who they will cooperate with. I personally think they're about to be taught some lessons on that. I can't go into details. But, and then we've got the Social Security Administration. And I'm just going to summarize what I'm feeling on all of this by saying when this is all said and done, because people compare it to the Kennedy assassination and so forth. This isn't the Kennedy assassination. The person who shot the bullet from across the grassy knoll or whatever, I mean, they're not still there. You can't go back and get them. But we still have microfilm at the Selective Service system. We still have microfilm in Hawaii at the Hawaiian Department of Health. We still have records at the Social Security Administration that they won't release. The evidence is there. Eventually it's going to come out. And all I can say is that I think it would be great once they all get their orange jumpsuits on and their leg shackles and their handcuffs on, that we get them all together for one big group picture. I would love to see that. And I've said it over and over, and some of the OBOTs, have tried to make a big deal out of it. Hey, look, Mark said he wanted to see Obama in an orange jumpsuit.
Oh, yeah.
And my response to that was, you're damned right I do.
Oh, yeah, me too. I'd like a 12x14 glossy of that.
I absolutely would. Now, the history of the United States is we just let presidents resign, but I personally think the crimes in this case are too
egregious.
Too egregious, yeah. That was the word I was searching for. Now, so you discovered this. You got a little fuel added to the fire when Linda Jordan, who's also been on this show, discovered that his Social Security number also doesn't pass E-Verify. So you have all this information. The card was issued in the wrong state. It's got an extra birth date in there, and it won't pass E-Verify. So you've decided at this point, you've had it. This guy doesn't deserve to run for a second term, and you're going to do something about it. What did you do then?
Well, excuse me. What I did is I filed a lawsuit in Common Pleas Court in the county in which I live against John Husted, the Ohio Secretary of State, who controls the elections. And my lawsuit said, in essence, that he was using a fraudulent Social Security number and could not run because his filing was, he was filing, but he's not who he says he is. And what I did is, because it's something you just mentioned about things being scrubbed from the Internet, and I knew, I was pretty sure that this lawsuit would be thrown out because they're all thrown out.
Mm-hmm.
I added all my proof with it. I added 83 pages of documents proving what I was alleging with the intention of it getting out on the Internet like it has, and they'll never be able to scrub all of them.
No, they will not.
Mm-mm. So I filed this last July. And I had a hearing in September.
And the judge at the hearing was named?
David Fury.
Fury. That couldn't be a more perfect name. That's like a dentist being named.
Well, except it's spelled F-U-H-R-Y.
Right. I saw that, but I was just thinking, that's like, occasionally you'll see a dentist list Dr. Payne. This guy is Dr. Fury, and obviously, I don't know where he gets his marching orders from, and I have no trouble saying this. I dare any of these bastards to sue me. I really do, because I'm going to have so
You know what? I'm of the same mind, because I thought, let them come after me, because we'll march right to discovery.
You got it. I would have so much fun with this clown in court during the discovery process. It's just like Obama. You can say anything you want to about Obama in the birth certificate, and he will never, ever come after you.
Uh-uh.
Because the last thing he wants to do is have this land in a courtroom. So,
that's right.
Yeah, so anyway, this guy, and by the way, it's like the picture that was picked for this one article on the internet was great, because his facial color seems to be changing to red while he's there on the bench, so it kind of probably matched his facial color whenever you were in his courtroom, because you found out very quickly that he didn't want you to be there.
Oh, very quickly.
Yeah.
I actually thought, because he was a Republican, that I might get a fair hearing. And I was so wrong, because when nobody showed up to defend Husted, and I'm sitting there at the table all by myself, and, you know, I don't immediately get a default judgment, I can see where it's going to head.
Yeah, did he ever issue an explanation for not giving a default judgment on?
No, he gave me two choices. He said, well, no one's here today from there. And I thought, yeah. He said, we can do one of two things. He said, we can either postpone the hearing for a week until I get to rule on their motion to dismiss. And he said, I was gone last week and didn't have a chance to look at it. And I sat there and thought, you're a liar. You had that thing 2 weeks ago, and it's only four pages long. You had plenty of time to look at it.
Could have looked at it that morning.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. He said, we can hold this off for a week until I move on that. And I thought, no, because you'll dismiss the case. Because I could just tell. He said, or we could go forward. And I said, let's go forward. So we did. And he was abrupt. He was dismissive. He was everything that a judge should not be, and became the defense attorney.
So basically they didn't show up to defend.
No.
So he decided rather than give a default judgment.
They weren't coming. Yeah.
Yeah. So he decided that he would just take their place for him.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is outrageous. This is the kind of thing.
Oh, yes.
You should be kicked off the bench for this kind of nonsense.
Yes, he should. Well, just as a little background on him, before he became a common pleas judge, which I believe was in 2002, he was a juvenile court magistrate. And I'm told by an attorney that I have great respect for that he really wasn't even very good there.
Well, yeah, and again, I feel free to say whatever you want about him. I'm not going to censor any of this, because I would love to get a hold of this guy during discovery. You know, I'd love to look at every damn phone call that was made to and from him, see how many of them
actually. Every email?
Every email. You
when
know,
they sent
from.
Up the his decision before the hearing was even held, when that came up from the state.
Yep.
Because I'm pretty sure that he didn't write it, because it was timestamped 3 days after the hearing.
Yeah, this whole thing is an example of what's been going on in courtrooms all across the country. It's been happening
right.
with Willie Tates. It's happened with Clayman, I believe, in Florida. And what we're seeing are judges who will do anything to punt that football and get it out of their side of the field as quickly as possible, because they don't want to touch this. Now, I don't know. Go ahead.
He couldn't throw me out on standing, because I had standing.
You were running for president at the time.
Right, since I was running for president.
And by the way, I'm sorry you didn't get elected.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I was a little disappointed, but...
I can imagine. And,
I had plans.
They had...
there were vacations I wanted to take.
Absolutely. Well, you know, Obama, I think, in his first year of office, played golf more than George W. Bush did in all 8 years. So this guy, he's on vacation more than he's actually at the White House.
Well, that's what he was promised, if he'd be the upfront man. You know, you don't ever have to do anything. You can just do what you want to do and spend what you want to spend, and your wife, too.
Okay. There is no question about the fact that this judge was acting irresponsibly, possibly even illegally. You've got a guy that should have given a default judgment. He didn't. He decided to go ahead and represent the other side. I don't think I've ever heard of that happening. It's like, oh, they didn't show up, so I'm going to represent them.
Yeah.
And
that's
then
exactly
there was this whole issue
did.
Of him. There was this whole issue, and this is where it gets sticky. He was trying to trick you with evidence versus an exhibit. So go ahead and tell my audience about that.
Well, I had, as I said, 83 pages of documents that I had submitted. I think there were 30 exhibits total, but I had an additional 10 that I wanted to enter, but I was trying to decide whether I needed to enter them or not. But one of them was an amicus brief from Jack Cashel. And what it said is that during all his research, for the 4 years he's researched Barack Obama, and while he was researching his book, Deconstructing Obama, at no point did he ever find that Obama had ever even visited the state of Connecticut, let alone lived there, like he would have to have done to get his Social Security number issued to him there. Well, when we got to this, the judge started to give me a hard time the minute I started. He was very abrupt, and when I started trying to enter other things as evidence, he'll say, "Well, we don't need that." And there were things that we didn't because they were actually duplicates.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, we get to the amicus brief, and I said, "Well, you know, here's something that I'd like to enter," and he said, "Is it evidence?" And I said, "It's an exhibit." And he said, "Is it evidence?" I said, "It's an exhibit." He said, "But is it evidence?" And at this point, now, you know, I'm not a lawyer, and I'm standing there alone. I have nobody to turn to. I thought, well, I wonder if the words must be interchangeable because he keeps asking me the same question. So I said, "Well, I guess it is." And he said, "Well, then you can't enter it because it's hearsay."
Yeah, that's one of those things where you just want to say, "Judge, have you never had an amicus brief entered in evidence before? Do you know what an amicus brief is?"
No, that's actually not what I wanted to say.
Yeah, I think I know what you know. Yeah, I've told you. I told you before the show started.
No, you can't read my mind.
I was gonna have to censor myself big time on this because this is an example of what's happened in America. You know, we do not have a justice system that represents honest, everyday people. If you're a big shot and you don't have to be the president of the United States, you get special treatment in the courts. And this Judge Fury was obviously giving special consideration to Barack Obama because he was the president of the United States.
Right.
And frankly, this guy needs to be removed from the bench. This guy shouldn't be allowed, you know, there should be, what's the word I'm looking for, a restraining order that keeps him from getting anywhere within 100 yards of a courtroom. I mean, I cannot believe this. So anyway, the guy was,
he should be everything.
This guy, again, represented your opponent, even though I would dare say that that's not legal. This guy was dismissive. He was rude. It was obvious he didn't want the case in his courtroom. And so he plays this number with you on the amicus brief. Obviously, you know where this is going. You're not going to win. So you get the ruling. You're not surprised. When did you decide, you know what, this guy's behavior was so outrageous, so egregious, that I've got to do something about this?
Well, I'll tell you, it took me maybe a month or 6 weeks. Because I don't, you know, there's an old saying, act in haste, repent in leisure. So mm-hmm. I like to sit back and try and think about, you know, what are my options? You know, unlike Democrats, I think of unintended consequences, you know, things along those lines. Well, eventually I said, you know what, I need a copy of the transcript. So I contact the court report, his court reporter.
Mm-hmm.
Her name is Beverly Modick. I contact her, say, what do I have to do to get a copy of the transcript? Because at this point I've already decided I want to file a complaint against him with the disciplinary counsel, the Ohio Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
But I need to attach the transcript. So she tells me, you know, send a check for, you know, $75 or whatever it was. And I do, and she calls me and says it's ready. So I go meet her at the courthouse, and while she's standing there, I flip through the pages to the back where I know that this interplay has taken part, and it's not there in the transcript. And I immediately challenged her. I said, this is not complete, despite the fact that on the very last page she writes that this is a true and accurate depiction of what happened and signs her name mm-hmm. to it. And she said, what do you mean? So I go word for word what is missing. And she said, well, I transcribed it, you know, right off my tape. And I thought, you're lying. You know, you are a liar. And I said, well, it's not complete. So I leave, and I send her, first I ask for 6 more copies because I thought, I may want to do something with this. So I get 6 additional copies from her, and it's like $20 or something. And when she brought those out to me, she was really kind of cocky because she thought, you know, there's nothing she can do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what I did is I wrote a letter to the Ohio Court Reporters Association saying that she had intentionally left information out of the transcript. And they wrote back and they said, well, she is not a member of our organization. And I assumed that the organization is one of those voluntary ones, that it's not like a licensing board.
Mm-hmm.
She does not belong to it. Right before then, I had gotten a letter from the Supreme Court saying they, even though I cited chapter and verse of the Judicial Code of Ethics, that he had violated during the hearing, they wrote mm-hmm. back and said, you know, he had done nothing wrong.
I saw that on the internet. Yeah, and I think at that point, you wrote Jack Cashel and said that, boy, they all stick together, don't they? And he wrote back, thick as thieves.
Yep. Yeah.
That's,
and then just the other day he wrote and told me to look for the story.
And I read that, and it is absolutely one of those things that makes you ashamed of America in its current state.
Yes.
You know, Michelle Obama famously said this was the first time she had been proud of America. Rush Limbaugh recently said this is the first time he's been ashamed of America. And when I see this travesty of justice that took place in the courtroom when you were trying to exercise your rights as an American citizen, I have to admit it's one of those things that makes me ashamed of America, because we have a situation now where judges all over America have not done their job and have kicked these cases out of court on some of the most ridiculous grounds. You know, and it's kind of interesting that in not one of these cases has anybody representing Barack Obama, you know, or representing his side of the argument, shown up and said, you know, well, no, Barack Obama does have a legitimate Social Security number. In fact, here's his handwritten application. You know, we don't see
that.
And that
would be available. The application for his number is available because I have a copy of the one for the number immediately before his and four numbers after his. So
yep,
his is on a microfilm available.
And that's one of those things that, you know, that's one of those things that we can get eventually. It's going to probably take someone other than Eric Holder being in charge of the Department of Justice. But that's one of those things that we can eventually get. And that's why I say this isn't like the Kennedy assassination. This isn't like, you know, Amelia Earhart. This isn't like the Lindbergh baby, you know, I mean, it's not,
right.
The evidence is sitting somewhere in a dusty
it's
old
available.
Government. Where else? Yeah, it's out there, and eventually we're going to get it. And people need to understand that this is going to be just like the way some of these Nazi war criminals were chased right up until the point where they jumped in their graves, because, you know, some of these people were very, very late in age when they were caught and put on trial. And, you know, some of them were very close to a natural death when this happened. And I'm sure they thought it was long behind them. But the people that have conspired. And I have no trouble using the word conspired. I mean, as Sheriff Arpaio pointed out, every year thousands of people get arrested for participating in a conspiracy. Thousands of people are in jail for being part of a conspiracy. There is a reason why conspiracy laws are on the books, but people tend to say, well, if something's a conspiracy, that's their way of saying you're nuts and there's no way that actually happened. Yeah, Wolf Blitzer asked Barack Obama if the conspiracy started back in 1961 when those two birth announcements appeared in the paper. My answer to that is the conspiracy to make him president? Absolutely not. The conspiracy to make sure he had U.S. citizenship? Absolutely. And in fact, it was a really huge conspiracy. It involves Stanley Dunham, Madeline Dunham, and Stanley Ann Dunham. Three people in the same family. Wow, what a conspiracy. But the bottom line is that everybody out there, from people in the Department of Health in Hawaii to people in the Attorney General's office in Hawaii, people in the governor's office in Hawaii, people at the Social Security Administration, people at the Selective Service System, there are going to be a lot of people in jail before this is over with. And, you know, I'm surprised that someone hasn't talked already, but they're probably fearful with this guy still in office. And you know,
The first one I want to see caught is the new senator from Hawaii, Brian Schatz, because he's the one that rigged the certificate of nomination in 2004 to take out the words under the Hawaiian Constitution about Barack Obama being eligible. I mean, in 2008, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
The first time he ran for office. I included in my documents Obama's certificate of nomination, which does not include mention of the Hawaiian Constitution, which, by the way, is the only one that mentions that the person has to qualify under their constitution. They did that when they became a state because they were trying so hard to do the right thing. And then I include the nominations for the Democrat Party for 2004 and 2000, and the words are in it. So those are all included in my documents. And Brian Schatz is the one who's responsible for having done that. He was the head of the Democrat Party, him and Nancy Pelosi.
Well, what we've seen, and you know, I always go back to Clinton when he was caught lying about Monica Lewinsky. You know, he said, my answers were legally accurate but intentionally misleading. And we are...
typical of a Democrat.
Exactly. And so we see a lot of wordplay going on here. You know, we see a lot of people that are saying things very carefully, trying to duplicate what Clinton claims to have done, and that is say things that are legally accurate but intentionally misleading. I've said this on the air before, but I think it bears repeating. The people in Hawaii, whenever they give verifications regarding Barack Obama's birth certificate, as you well know, if you go back and look at what they sent Ken Bennett in Arizona and some of the things they've sent to other people, they always say, we have information on file that verifies the information in Barack Obama's long-form birth certificate.
They're very careful about the way they word it.
Yeah, they are. Now, that leaves a lot of things open. For instance, they have information that verifies what he put out there. They don't say that they have it all in one place on one document. That leaves open the possibility that his original birth certificate had a gazillion holes in it, meaning blank lines that were not filled in. We know by some of the receipts, or some of the, rather, the letters that people got back after asking for receipts for any changes that he may have made to his birth certificate. Based on the way those were worded, we know that there was some funny business going on, some additions to his birth certificate, amendments, if you will, that were done between late 2006 and early 2007. So if somebody were to ask the Department of Hawaii very directly for a verification and ask, is there anything missing off of his birth certificate that he posted at whitehouse.gov, like late filing or amended, it would be interesting to see them try to dance their way out of that one. I would also like to say, I would also like to see someone say, you claim you have information on file. Is all this information on one document, or is it on multiple documents? And if it's on multiple documents, how much of it is on affidavits, and when were they filed? I would love to see somebody that really understands the issue at hand write a list of questions for some attorney general or some secretary of state to pose to them the way Ken Bennett did, only he didn't do a very good job, and he couldn't wait to wash his hands up.
Oh, no, and he folded. He
washed his hands as quick as possible.
He folded faster than Superman on laundry day.
the fact of the matter is that if you word your questions the right way, they're not going to be able to dance out of it with this legally accurate but intentionally misleading crap. They're not going to be able to do that.
The most compelling thing from Hawaii is there are only two hospitals on the island of Oahu, Kapiolani Hospital and Queens Medical Center, where he could have been born. And yet neither one of them takes credit for the President of the United States having been born there.
Well, what's interesting is that I think on his fourth day in the White House, he sent Kapiolani a congratulatory letter for having been the birthplace of Barack Hussein Obama. And
their 100th anniversary or something.
They initially put it behind a frame, put it on the wall for everybody to see, and they started using it in fundraising letters. Somebody contacted them and pointed out, you know, if you can't prove he was born there and you're using this to raise funds, you're guilty of fraud.
Yep.
And shortly after getting that notification, the framed copy of that letter was taken down from public display, and they stopped using Barack Obama's birth as a fundraising tool. So that was somebody saying, you know, I'm not going to go to jail over this.
Yep.
Or somebody said, well, we got the letter from him, but we better check this out. And they realized that there was no evidence that he was ever born at Kapiolani. Now, don't get me wrong. I firmly believe that some kind of a document was filed back in August of 1961. I don't doubt that for a minute, because I don't think the two newspapers were rigged, and I think that...
Well, they just print stuff that is given to them from the Board of Health, but anybody could go to one of the outlying offices of the Department of Health and fill out a form. You don't have to prove anything.
Right. The media should know that, yet they still keep falling back on those two birth announcements.
Oh, yeah, and it's meaningless.
Absolutely meaningless. It wouldn't be probative. In fact, you know, given how easy it is to get your name in those papers, considering how many Japanese children, who some of which have never even set foot in America, appeared in the same two newspapers, I don't know how anybody could consider that evidence. But apparently,
well, they have a birth certificate. In fact, I have a copy of it. Chiang Kai-shek being born in Hawaii.
I think the media has absolutely not done their job, not because they're incompetent, but because they don't want to do their job in this particular instance.
Oh, no, it's not incompetence. This is malicious. This is outright lying to the country.
What I like to apply is a little something called the Palin test. I've said this on my show frequently, so if you're a frequent listener, I apologize. But if this were Sarah Palin, who was born in Idaho, by the way, not Alaska. Well, thanks. She was born in Idaho. But if this were Sarah Palin and somebody said, you know, she really wasn't born in Idaho, but her mom went over the border to Canada to have her, the newspapers would be, and the mainstream media, the main networks would be all over this. They vetted Sarah Palin better in 2 months than they vetted Barack Obama over a 5-year period. They vetted Joe the plumber better in 2 days than they vetted Barack Obama. They don't want to know the truth on this.
No.
They're afraid of the
truth.
No,
they know the truth. They just don't want anybody else to know the truth.
Well, I think it's ironic, and I know that you saw this video I put together recently and is available on YouTube, but one of the big problems with the short form is that it didn't have a seal on it, the raised seal. And so Barack Obama holds this press conference, and questions were not taken by him at the press conference, as I understand it. Now, some of the other people, the White House, I think his attorney, Bauer, or whatever his name is, he took questions, and I think we may have had another White House official take questions, but Barack Obama himself hopped on the stage, made a little speech, and then he had to get to an interview with Oprah Winfrey, of all people. And so, you know, the cameras were not allowed. The document was not put on public display. And only one reporter got to have any kind of an interaction with the document, and that was Savannah Guthrie. And
right.
The words out of her mouth when she was reporting to Brian Williams on NBC's Evening News was, "I held it in my hand, I felt the raised seal."
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Vince put out a tweet, "I felt the raised seal." And I thought, boy, she really got the talking point down, didn't she? Now, Savannah, they're not going to be able to see the raised seal on the PDF we put on the WhiteHouse.gov website. You can't tell by looking at it that it has a raised seal. That already came up once with the short form. So we're going to need to have somebody say they felt that raised seal and we picked you. In exchange for that, you're going to be the only reporter allowed to touch this document or see this document or photograph this document, even though cameras weren't supposed to be allowed. I think she might have used her cell phone, but it really doesn't matter. And so she willingly took the job, and, you know, in exchange for being given the exclusivity, boy, she talked up that seal, even tweeted it out that day as well. So that picture that she took, or she took two pictures. One was useless because it didn't show the boundaries of the document. But that picture clearly demonstrates that when you compare the what we're told is a certified copy of his long-form birth certificate straight from Hawaii to what they posted at WhiteHouse.gov, when you remove the clipping mask on the PDF file found at WhiteHouse.gov and you look behind it, there's hidden information that isn't on the picture she took. And as I show in the video, that's like going down with your family for a family portrait, and you get the pictures back, and there's clown in the picture or somebody you don't know in the picture. It's absolutely impossible. You can't have stuff on a copy that wasn't on an original. And,
right.
You know, I think it's absolutely delicious that a liberal reporter trying to lend authenticity to the document has actually given us a very important piece of evidence demonstrating that there's no way in the world that that PDF file was made by scanning in what Savannah Guthrie took a photograph of. And because the date stamp and the registrar's stamp, which are both placed by hand, match perfectly on her picture and the PDF file, we know it's the same document. Some people say, well, he got more than one certified copy. It must be one of the other ones. No, the date stamp and the signature stamp match. So, you know, I would love in the end for the crucial piece of evidence to bring this house of cards tumbling down to be a liberal reporter who was trying to have just the opposite effect. So I'll go box on that, but I'm really hoping for that. Let's get one more thing out of the way about that Social Security number. A lot of people say, well, you know, they got the zip codes mixed up because the Connecticut zip code is very similar to the Hawaiian zip code. One thing is he was over the age of 12 based on the date that we're told he applied. So he would have had to go down and get it himself at the...
It was actually issued on March 28, 1977. And he was 15 at the time.
Okay.
And would have had been living in Connecticut. Well, ironically, Hawaii's zip codes start with 968.
Mm-hmm.
And Connecticut start with 068.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how they came up with that argument. There are several problems with that, however, though.
Okay.
The only possible zip codes he had at that time, because where he lived, I think at some point they reassigned zip codes. The only possible ones ended with 1422 and 26. And what I did is I contacted the post office where the two never existed. If you go to the UPS sites, the ones ending in 22 and 26, they never existed in Connecticut. The one that ended in 14 did exist in Danbury, Connecticut, but it was a unique number. Well, I wasn't sure what that meant, so I called the post office in Danbury, Connecticut, and I talked to a guy named George who they handed the phone to because he had been there forever. And I said, you know, can you tell me about this zip code? And he said, oh, that was assigned to Union Carbide for their exclusive use. And he said, and he said it's been out of use now for a couple of years. So he said it was not issued until Union Carbide opened. So I did some research on Union Carbide, found that they had built their building in 1992, and workers started coming in either that year or the following year. So that number didn't even exist till the 90s. So no, the typo doesn't work.
The OBOTs are saying, well, what they did was they just looked at the first three numbers and they saw thought it was
kind of... How pathetic are they?
Well, you know, that's a whole other show. I've actually looked into many of their backgrounds, and some of them are clean-cut good people, but some of them have a lot in common with Barack Obama. So.
Oh, yeah, they're all liars.
Well,
they're
absolutely
liars. There is not one person yet who has been able to actually find fault with my work.
Now,
no one has ever been able to.
Now, was I correct in saying that at age 15 he would have had to go down to the local Social Security Administration office and do that in person, because if you're over 12, you're supposed to have to do that? That's correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So the idea that the clerk helping him that day suddenly had a mental lapse and thought she was in Connecticut is probably, or he thought he was in Connecticut, is probably pretty unlikely.
Yeah, I think that's. Yeah, I think you could say that without fear of equivocation.
I love talking to you. I really do. I have a blast every time we talk. So we only have a couple minutes left. I have to get on to another guest. But tell me now, what's next for Susan Daniels? Are you still investigating? Do you feel like you've taken your shot and you've done all you can? Are you going to keep fighting? What, where are you now, Susan? What's going on?
You know what? I'm in the pause position right now. I'm thinking about a couple of things, and I'm also thinking about, you know, how many times do you want to bang your head against the wall? The information's out there. You know, it's time for somebody else to pick up the burden and carry it. And then I think, you know, I don't really know what I'm going to do. What I'd like to do is dispel that whole myth about somebody named Harrison Bunnell having that number.
There you go.
Being Barack Obama, because that's complete bull. There is no truth to that. Somebody, without using good judgment, took one piece of evidence they found and made a whole narrative out of it, and it's all false.
Well, let me say this too, if I can add something to that.
Sure.
I spoke with Mike Zullo, the lead investigator in the Obama eligibility investigation for the cold case posse in Maricopa County. And Mike told me that he was contacted about the Harrison Bunnell thing. And he said, well, here's a number you can call. And the next thing he knows, there's stuff all over the internet saying the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office officially investigating the Harrison Bunnell issue. And he stressed to me over the phone that they are not officially investigating the issue. They're not even unofficially investigating.
You know, the person involved wants to stretch their 15 minutes of fame in something, and it's a joke. I mean, I warned him this before he started not to do it, because I said it could be as simple as a typo. Don't do it, because I really did all kinds of research into that name before the debt collector splashed that all over the internet, and there's no truth to it.
Well, I appreciate you setting the record straight on that. At least we've given the OBOTs a headline they can use when they write up this interview. The headline, the interview is going to be, Susan Daniels says Harrison Bunnell issue is nonsense. And quite frankly, we're quite comfortable with that. So go ahead.
I wouldn't have said it if I didn't know I was right.
Very good. I've got another guest to bring on. We're going to be right back with Jim Wise from Surprise, Arizona, and we'll get with him in just a second. Susan, thanks for being on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me, Mark. It's always enjoyable.
Oh, I always have a great time, too. And unlike normal times when we talk for a little bit after the interview, I do have to call this other gentleman right now.
Yep.
So I have to let you go. It's great talking
with
you.
Thanks for including me, Mark.
You got it. I'll send you the link as soon as it posts.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Hi, I'm Brian Brody. Have you ever lost your power and simply wanted to flip a switch to turn your lights back on? If so, this message is the most important you will ever hear, because there's never been a better time to get off the grid and generate your own supply of electrical power. Solar power generators are now available. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving electrical power when you need it most. Unlike gas generators, a solar generator runs quietly, emits no fumes, and produces electricity from the sun. It's like running an electric power plant in your own home. Hurricanes, ice storms, brownouts, blackouts, you'll never suffer through painful power outages again.
And if you'd like to learn how you can get a solar generator for your family, just go to teapartypowerhour.com and click on the appropriate ad. While you're there, you'll also see ads for solar ovens, extended life light bulbs, and life-saving survival food packets.
Are you worried about the economy? Have you ever wondered if the politicians and the bankers are going to bring the whole thing crashing down? If so, pay close attention. Because in an economic meltdown, non-hybrid seeds could become more valuable than even silver and gold. After all, securing a source of food for your family is the single most important thing you can do. Introducing the Survival Seed Bank, the perfect mix of germination-tested non-hybrid seeds. You get enough seeds to plant a full-acre crisis garden that can produce an endless supply of nutrient-dense food for you and your family. And the best part? Is that these seeds have not been genetically modified in any way. Remember, in a real economic crisis, non-hybrid seeds are the ultimate barter item. Prepare your family today.
Prepare your family today by going to teapartypowerhour.com and clicking on the ad for the Survival Seed Bank. Now, while you're there, you're going to see ads for a lot of other products that can help your family in the event of a disaster, whether the disaster is government-made or natural. You're going to see ads for things like solar-powered ovens, solar-powered electrical supplies, and freeze-dried food that can provide your family with immediate nutrition in the event of an economic meltdown. Once again, the place to go is teapartypowerhour.com. And we are back at the Tea Party Power Hour. My next guest is Jim Wise. He is with an organization in Arizona called Citizens to Protect Fair Election Results. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Did I get the name of the organization right?
You did.
Okay,
and our website is www.cpfer.com.
Very, very good. What is the purpose of your organization?
Well, I think most people know that there was a lot of activity in Wisconsin last year with recalls. And the same type of activity has started in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
The first one that's come up this year is on Sheriff Joe Arpaio. And that came in about less than 20 days after he was sworn into office.
Who's doing this?
And this organization, they call themselves Respect Arizona, has already announced that after Sheriff, they're going to go after the governor. So they're trying the same thing in Arizona that they did in Wisconsin.
Very quickly.
And we're starting to see pushback from other organizations that are now threatening to recall other people, and it just seems to be getting out of hand. So what we wanted to do, I'm sorry.
Is this the same kind of deal, Jim, where a lot of the people that are going to be involved are probably not even from your area?
Yes, and they're being paid to collect the signatures.
Wow.
They need, I think,
$350,000. Wow. Okay.
So it's a rough road to hoe. But when you see what happened with these recalls, that to fight it, you get the signature verifications, and then you have to get into the expense of actually having the recall election, and our county estimates a $5 million cost to do this thing. So we thought we would try to stop it legally ahead of time. And we retained Larry Klayman,
mm-hmm.
who's a prominent attorney and has been involved in freedom kind of issues in the past.
Yes.
And he has taken on the case. And we have taken our first step, which is a cease and desist letter. I might add that, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, when the other group that's actually trying to spearhead the recall came out and announced this, what is their reason for recalling Sheriff Arpaio, other than the fact that they don't like him enforcing immigration law?
Well, I read their recall petition. Everything that they have in their recall were issues that the media covered extensively in the election process. So all of it was out there. In spite of that, just about 680,000 people voted for Sheriff Arpaio to put him back into office. Nothing has changed since the election, nor since he took office.
Well,
so there is nothing new.
Who heads the organization that's attempting to recall Sheriff Arpaio?
I don't have it in front of me. I think behind the scenes is a fellow named Perez.
Yes,
he's a fellow who I believe came over from California, and he was behind the recall on a couple of other folks.
Wow. Were those, when you say a couple of other folks in Arizona or a couple of other folks elsewhere?
Well, yeah, Russell Pierce, he was behind that one, and that actually worked.
Mm. So, where are things right now? Where are things right now? Give us a snapshot.
Well, we had our press conference. We were successful in that we had all three. We put this all together in less than 2 weeks. We organized the company, got the attorney, and held the press conference and launched the website. And we had all three television networks there. We had the AP Wire there. So where it stands now is they were given 10 days to cease and desist, and if they haven't, then we'll file with the courts. And what we're doing now is trying to raise funds to support this effort to pay the attorney and the legal fees.
And
if we can stop it now, it's going to save everybody a lot of money.
It certainly sounds like it. You said $5 million approximately?
Correct. Plus all of the people time to do all the activities that have to be done if it moves forward.
Now, a lot of people would say that they're just exercising their legal rights by attempting to recall Sheriff Arpaio. Obviously, you disagree. Why?
Well, the Arizona Constitution says you have to wait 6 months.
Okay.
Plain and simple. Not 21 days, it says 6 months.
Okay.
So then
they're just going to file again in 6 months?
Well, I don't know. They're spending a lot of money now. They're going through a lot of activity. We're just trying to protect the voters and stand behind the laws that are on the books, well, the Constitution.
Well, Jim, are you optimistic that you'll be able to stop this?
Yes. Yeah, we were. We wouldn't have stuck our neck out if we weren't.
And do you feel that way mainly because they didn't wait the required 6 months?
Yes. Yeah, I think that's a major factor in it, that it's in the Constitution. Yeah, they have some college professors that are saying there have been some statutes since then, but the Constitution has never been amended. And I'm not an attorney, I'm not a lawyer, but I always thought that the Constitution won out unless it was amended.
Sounds like a good argument to me. Now, in addition to the time period issue, are there any other issues involved with this attempted recall that give you confidence that you will ultimately prevail?
Well, just working with Larry Klayman and getting his opinions and what he thinks he can do.
Very good. Now, you're no newcomer to politics. You are, in fact, involved with the Surprise Tea Party in Surprise, Arizona. What's your role and history with that organization?
Well, some of it's true. I'm newcomer in the fact that I never really, other than voting, had been involved in politics until the 2009 Tea Party, mm-hmm. where everybody started rallying. That was our first really adventure into politics. My wife and I were the co-founders of the Surprise Tea Party, and we had been involved in it for about 3 years. We're still part of that group, although I've tried, and we have successfully gotten other people to take over the leadership of it. So that's been my experience in politics.
Well, for folks at home that don't know, it was the Surprise Tea Party that delivered a petition to Sheriff Arpaio asking him to essentially vet Barack Obama with regard to his eligibility to serve as president. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. A lot of things led up to that. And if you have a few minutes, I'll give you the background on it.
I do, please. Go ahead.
One of the groups, several years ago, one of our members brought up the fact that for an individual to get on the ballot for President of the United States in Arizona, all they needed was a letter. And this letter just said the National Convention of the Democratic Party or Republican Party has nominated these candidates, basically put them on the ballot. That's it. There's no state vetting, and there's no federal vetting. So we worked with a couple of our representatives, and this is on the state level. I was outraged. I mean, I couldn't believe what you have to go through and the documents you have to show to do simple things in life, let you can go for the most powerful office in the country and not have to show any proof of eligibility. So we had some of our representatives to put some bills through that would require that they show that they are constitutionally eligible to be president. The first year we got it through one side. I was secondary in this. I was just helping this fellow do this. The second year we got it through both sides and the governor vetoed it.
Why did Jim Brewer do that?
I have no idea. I can't imagine why anybody would not want somebody for the most powerful office in the world to not show that they're eligible. So then the third year, we thought, well, maybe they think we're singling it out. So the third year, I believe we modified it so that it said basically anybody running for office in the state of Arizona had to prove their eligibility. And that never got out of committee. Well, it got out of committee, but never got out of the House side. They sat on it. So we were frustrated. After that, the president's birth certificate was released on his website. And we were made aware by Jerome Corsi of WND that it was a forgery, and we had we'd reviewed the documentation, the 20-some experts and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
We said, well, it certainly sounds like it is not a valid document. So we brought him in and asked him to present to us, and we had, I don't know, 250 or 275 people at the meeting. And after listening to what he had to say, it was obvious that the document had been altered. So we had a petition around the room and had everybody that wanted to sign it. And we took that down to Sheriff Arpaio and asked him if he wouldn't look into it. That's what started it.
And obviously he said yes, and I guess the rest is kind of history at this point.
Yeah, he did. He gave it a few days and did some soul searching on it and then said that he would. Because in our opinion, you know, this document has been presented to all the residents of Maricopa County, and mm-hmm. it's a forgery. So we think it's a bad thing in our county, and we asked him as our county law enforcement officer to look into it, and he did. And I have been amazed at the lack of coverage that this has gotten.
That was my next question.
I was at the first press conference, and when I saw it again, when it was over, I was speechless. I couldn't believe that this was being done to the American people. And then the press's reaction, not one person in the press had any questions about the presentation and its validity. All the press went after Sheriff Joe and, why are you doing this? What's your motivation? And I just couldn't believe that. And to this day, there hasn't been an outcry from 100 experts saying that they're wrong. So it seems pretty well that the document is a forgery. And we've tried. We've gone to all of our federal representatives and asked them to take action, and none of them have done anything.
Well, I think Ken Bennett asked for a verification and kind of folded quickly, as my previous guest said. He got that thing back saying, we have information on file that verifies the information. That wasn't what they were asked, but that's how they responded, and Ken was like, well, I'm done here. I was kind of embarrassed about how he approached that. I also think, it's funny, I had the same reaction. Sheriff Arpaio was on this show 2 days after, if not the day after, the press conference, the first press conference. And that's what I told him. I said, wasn't it interesting that there wasn't, and this is still available on YouTube on the Obama Release Your Record sites, this interview. I said, wasn't it interesting that there wasn't a single question about, really? You can move the date stamp and the registrar stamp around in one piece? Really? Let's look at this thing. Really? It said African when it should have said Negro based on the instructions that the Department of Health would have had from the federal government at that time? Really? And you go into all the other things, and I'm not gonna repeat all the different anomalies. There's like 2 pages worth of them, and people know how to find that information by now. But the bottom line is there wasn't one question regarding the authenticity of the document. I'll tell you what really knocked them on their butts was the Selective Service Card information, because they had no idea that was even going to be presented. You know, really? The postal stamp is phony? Really, those postal stamp year dates come in 4-digit blocks, and this one only had 2, and the 8 was upside down, and you could tell where the forger tried to shave it? Really, Sheriff Arpaio? I mean, tell me more about that. No, there was none of that going on. It was, what's your motivation? What do you hope to gain by this? And then there was this one jackass who got up and said, how can you possibly say that this isn't legit when every major group that's ever investigated it has found that it is legit? And, Arpaio was like, I still remember what the guy looked like. Arpaio was saying, hey, name one organization that's done this type of thorough review. Give us a name. Who did it? Who's done this? Who's done what we did? And, of course, the reporter had to shut up because nobody has verified a single darn thing about this. And it was embarrassing to watch. Now, what's interesting is that I had a friend that was in the room that day for the press conference, and she told me that whenever everybody came in, all the reporters were like laughing and giggling, and, this old man thinks he knows something about computers, in reference to Arpaio, and it's such a waste of time. Why are they sending us here? This is such a joke. And they were all laughing and giggling and making fun of Arpaio and making fun of birthers. And when he laid all that information on them, and I'm pretty familiar with it because I'm the voice on those videos and I actually produce those videos, when he laid that on the press, they were speechless. They didn't have anything they could say about the evidence because it was so rock solid. So they went after Arpaio himself, and they went after Zulo. I remember them asking Zulo if he was a member of a Tea Party. They didn't know what to ask because they weren't expecting to see any real evidence that day. But what my friend told me, Jim, she said that when the reporters came in, they were giggly, they were happy, they were in a joyous mood, and after they saw that evidence and they went out, boy, they had scowls on their faces. They were ticked off. that they didn't have answers for that evidence. They knew it was credible, and they were now saddled with the task of figuring out how to write up that story without releasing any of that evidence, which wasn't going to be easy, although most of them did it. They thought they were going to go there, and it was all going to be a joke, and they were going to be able to debunk it and make Arpaio look like a fool because the evidence didn't amount to anything, and instead they had to go out and write stories completely devoid of any discussion of the evidence. So Sean Hannity, who, by the way, I'm very upset with for not taking the ball and running with it on this story, but Sean Hannity said back in 2008 that 2008 was the year that the media died. I would argue that 2012 was the year that the conservative media died. All the people in the conservative media railing against us, Ann Coulter, Sean Hannity, Mark Levin, Bill O'Reilly, all these people that could be supporting us right now who have chosen to put their tail between their legs and run. What are your thoughts, not so much on the media, because we all know they're state-run anyway, not the mainstream media, but what's your thought on these radio guys like Rush Limbaugh, Mark Levin, Sean Hannity, Glenn Beck, these outspoken political commentators like Michelle Malkin, who's made fun of birthers, and Ann Coulter, who's actually put misinformation in her book Demonic about birthers, and it was misinformation because she left part of a quote out by Dr. Fucino. What are your thoughts on the conservative media not doing a darn thing about this, Jim?
Well, they're taking the same approach that the politicians are, okay? One, they misspeak about what we've said. When we confront our congressmen, and we've confronted them all over the state, and when we confront the senators, what they say is, we are convinced that President Obama was born in the United States. Mm-hmm. We've never said that he wasn't. What we've said is that birth certificate is a fake, and they won't answer that. They come back with, we believe that's not the issue. And you hear sometimes the Hannitys and the rest, they say the same thing. Well, they say he wasn't born here. That's not what we said. We said this document's a fake. So if it's a fake, where's the real one? What's going on? Why won't somebody investigate it?
It's so bad, Jim, that people have cornered U.S. representatives in town hall meetings on the issue of the Selective Service Card, okay, which could very possibly just have to do with the fact that he was a young Marxist punk. He wrote an article when he was a senior at Columbia that showed his support for ARA, which was Arms Race Alternatives, which was a student group that advocated not registering for Selective Service. And he showed his support in that article for SAM, which was a student-run group called Students Against Militarism. And the odds are he was just a young Marxist punk, if not a young communist punk, after being mentored by Frank Marshall Davis for 9 years. And that gives a very good reason why he would not have registered for Selective Service. But if you don't register for Selective Service, you can't hold a position within the executive office of our federal government. So he had to make a registration happen. He did it in a way that, frankly, and I'll say this, the Selective Service card, the Selective Service registration card is more phony than the birth certificate. It's absolutely a joke that when you corner elected officials and you say, okay, you're afraid of being called a birther, fine. The Selective Service card has a two-digit postal stamp that's upside down. You could see where they tried to shave off the top of the letter 8 so you couldn't tell because the bottom of the 8 is bigger on these official government-made four-digit year stamps. What are you going to do about that? And then they repeat, I believe he was born in Hawaii. I didn't ask you if he was born in Hawaii. I asked you what you're going to do about a Selective Service card. And they still don't want to answer it. These people are so cowardly. You know, I had a guy that I went to private school with him for many years, and I asked him about this issue, and he goes, nobody really wants this investigated. If we were to have a town hall meeting with a room full of Republicans and we said, who wants to see this investigated, most people would just giggle and say, there are better ways you can spend your time. I said, yeah, if every Republican in the room is a member of the House of Representatives. But if it's the people that voted your guy into office, they're going to raise their hand and say, let's vet this guy. But I couldn't convince him of that. I've never seen such dereliction of duty. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous.
I agree 100%. And the only official in the country that stepped forward was Sheriff Joe Arpaio.
Yeah, the only one out of all elected people.
Yes. And, that's just it. And I don't believe that at the onset, I would be speaking for him. I don't believe any of us thought that there would not be an outcry when we found out that that document is not authentic.
I can't.
None of us can believe it.
Well,
whether it's the media, politicians, none of them.
If it were Sarah Palin or George W. Bush or Dan Quayle or George Herbert Walker Bush or Ronald Reagan, the media would be all over this. You know, Bob Woodward's in the news recently. He was part of a presidential takedown. Bob Woodward on this. I mean, he doesn't seem to have a tolerance for presidents who break the law. The whole thing is just disgusting. And the biggest part of my disgust comes from the part that the mainstream media regurgitates all these lies that they've been fed by the left. You know, the two newspaper announcements. Give me a frickin' break. I mean, all you have to do is go down and, as my previous guest said, go down to one of the outlying satellite offices of the Department of Health and say, we had a baby at the house, and your name shows up in the paper. That's not any big deal. That's just a couple of grandparents trying to make sure their grandson has citizenship. Tell me this. Where is your organization going next? What's the next step in this process for you?
Well, the investigation's not over. Mike Zullo and the sheriff have not thrown in the towel. All right. They're still working on the investigation. So, you know, we'll back them any way we can. You know, we're involved as a separate group of us are involved in the Citizens to Protect Fair Election Results. And those are two pretty active things to do for a handful of folks.
I do understand more than you can ever know, Jim. It's amazing how thin a lot of us are being spread because we're having to do the jobs that elected officials should be doing, that judges should be doing, that the mainstream media should be doing, that the conservative media really should be doing, including some of our previous heroes in talk radio who suddenly have turned into cowards with yellow stripes down their backs. It's just absolutely amazing to me that we are in a situation where the courts are against us, the media is against us, our own conservative media is against us, and our own elected officials, many of whom would not even be in office were it not for the Tea Party, got there and decided to abandon us. Sort of like, I mean, you talk about David versus Goliath. I mean, you know, what the heck? I mean, we've never, ever seen the deck stacked against a group this much. But yet, like you, I'm not giving up. Sheriff Arpaio's not giving up. Mike Zullo's not giving up. Everybody I know involved with this is not giving up. And it sounds like your group isn't giving up either. So I guess we'll just fight this to the end.
That's what we'll do. Yeah, it's the old 80-20 rule. You know, 20% of the people, the customers, whatever, you know, do the work. And that 20% is not going to give up. Some of the 80 might, but the 20's not. And, you know, we want to know. We're not saying who forged it. We're not saying why they forged it. We're just saying it's a forgery.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Somebody ought to do something about it.
And what's really sad is that it's not just a forgery. It's a blatant forgery. It's got so many anomalies in it that cannot be explained. I mean, the Obot clowns, forgery deniers, like to... First, they threw out optical character recognition software as the reason the document looks the way it does. Then they had to agree, as you saw in the first in one of the first videos at the first press conference, we showed evidence that it was not optical. It was not run through optical character recognition software. You would have seen words recognized. You would have seen fonts recognized. None of that happened. Then they said it was adaptive compression, and Mara Zabest was able to demonstrate that the document had 8 1-bit layers and one layer that was 8 bits, and if it had been run through adaptive compression, it would have been the other way around. Then they said it was mixed raster compression, but there are several things about that. One, mixed raster compression rarely has more than 3 layers. A document that's been put through mixed raster compression that has color would have a corresponding 8-bit layer for every 1-bit layer that has color. This document does not have that, and furthermore, if a document's been run through mixed raster compression and you open it in Adobe Illustrator, you get an error message, and that doesn't happen with this document. So it's not OCR software, it's not adaptive compression, it's not mixed raster compression, it's a fake document by a forger that frankly didn't know what they were doing. In addition to all the computer errors, there are also typewriter errors. Paul Irey's done a really good job of looking at some of the stuff and pointing out that, you know, on one layer you'll have a one line of the document, you'll have a letter that's bent, something that happens, damage that happens as part of the typing process for those of us old enough to remember manual typewriters, and I am. Then on the next line, suddenly the letter isn't bent. I mean, what did they do? Continually take the document out of a typewriter and put it back in another one and then switch it back? Just... It fails the test. It fails the sniff test from a typesetter standpoint, if you will. It fails the test from a computer expert standpoint, and it also fails the common sense test because they're using terms like African, which have never been used in anybody's birth certificate, because African is a geographic description. If I'm born in Africa, am I African? If they wanted to put down my race, if I were born in Africa to the same two parents and I'm Caucasian and I went in for a birth certificate, would they look at me and say Mark's Caucasian, or would they say Mark's African? I mean, come on, it's a damn joke. The whole thing about this, the Selective Service Card's an even bigger joke. The Social Security Administration number, the Social Security number, if you will, is a stolen Social Security number once used by somebody born in 1890. Even his own literary agent listed him as Kenyan-born. I don't necessarily believe the Kenyan-born thing, but I do believe if Sarah Palin's agent had listed her as Canadian-born, somebody would be interested. So anyway, the bottom line is, we've got all this evidence. No prosecutor in Arizona will help Sheriff Arpaio. No member of Congress will help Sheriff Arpaio. They keep hearing, every time they go to a member of Congress, they hear Boehner said no, or, hey, this is too hot to handle, I can't risk the ridicule. Nobody says the evidence isn't there. Nobody says the evidence isn't valid. What we keep hearing, Jim, is, I can't touch this, you might not get reelected, or I don't want to upset Boehner. If I upset Boehner, then I might as well not even be in Congress, because he's going to strip me of any power I have. There's an old saying, you can't fight City Hall. Hell, compared to this, just fighting City Hall would be easy, wouldn't it?
Well, where we're spending our time now is on this recall, because, you know, that we can do. I'm sure that that has something, and it's probably one of the issues that's behind this recall, although they're not saying that publicly. But this recall goes more than just Sheriff, it goes past Sheriff Joe. You know, this can just get out of hand. It can throw our whole election process. Every time somebody's elected, now we're going to have a recall if you don't like the outcome. I mean, that's just absolutely nuts. So we're going to spend our time on this. We're still supporting the other issue, but this is where we are spending our time right now.
I think it's interesting that you see the issues as being somewhat related. So you're suggesting that one of the reasons, not the only reason, but one of the reasons this group may be going after Sheriff Arpaio is because they do not like the fact that he is investigating Obama's eligibility?
I believe that. I do. I believe that's one of the reasons.
Very good. Jim, I want to thank you for being here today. One more time, give us that website and tell us how people can contribute to the cause.
The website is www.cpfer.com, and everything is out there, the demand letter, the press release, the actual raw footage from the press conference. And there's a P.O. box if they want to mail checks, and there's a PayPal if they want to contribute that way.
I want to thank you for being here today. Best of luck with your effort to block this senseless recall, which frankly was filed 5.5 months too early, or whatever it was, at least 5 months too early. You know, we'll have you back to let us know how it's going.
Thanks for having me on.
Certainly, Jim. Have a good day.
You've been listening to the Tea Party Power Hour with Mark Gillard.